Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs, or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio.
Well, that was a bummer. I don't know. We got technical problems with the phone lines. Hopefully, we're going to get that figured out before Ilya Shapiro in the next hour. It's always something around here, Sue.
Yeah,
not only that, was, you know, and this is, we don't complain about this as much because it was fixed, apparently. And the listeners are very concerned about the temperature in the studio when we did talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
But we haven't had an issue with the temperature in the studio in weeks, ever since I brought my thermometer in magically.
Yep.
And it said 66, and then all of a sudden, we haven't had to complain. But they're working on something outside of where my office is, and they had the windows open, and
it's
it was literally, I had the thermometer still, was 63 degrees in my office. 63!
Yeah, that's chilly.
Along those lines, you're wearing an interesting jacket this afternoon, Sue.
I am.
If people would like to check this out on the YouTube feed or on the X formerly Twitter, because honestly, this looks like a jacket that I had in about 1977.
Yeah, that would be correct. Part of what happened during Christmas in Grafton is that Michael's mother said, you know what? I think I have your B coat. And I said, to Mike, she said, your B coat from when you were in fourth or fifth grade. And we, who didn't know what they were talking about, said, say what? And it's a coat that he wore. It was his first down coat, so it would have been in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a tall kid. He's a tall guy. So it's just perfect for me to wear.
It looks a little like there's Rams colors involved.
It
so it's
does.
It's blue and yellow stripe. But
yes.
I'm telling you, I can't tell you this 100%. Maybe if my mom and dad are watching on the stream, I swear to God, I had the same coat.
Did you really? It would be the same time. It's Lord and Taylor. I looked at it.
Every once in a while, you know what else was real popular back then? Oh, that sounded too fancy. I don't think I would have done Lord and Taylor.
Well, he was kind of surprised when he saw that, too.
Yeah.
He thought, wow.
I don't think I would have, because I don't think they had those in Chicago. Maybe they did. But, I mean, it looks... But
well,
let's
that's where
it.
He was at the time.
Oh, well, there it is. Maybe
yes.
It was. That's interesting.
He would have been in Geneva.
Wow, that's fascinating. But my point on that was, you know, every once in a while I see a movie that's set in the 80s, and they used to have these, they would call them like rugby shirts.
Yes,
remember?
We had rugby shirts, and they had rubber buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's how you knew they were real.
I'll see a movie every once in a while and I'm like, I had that rugby shirt. I had that for sure. Those never really made a comeback, did they?
No, they really did. But maybe they will. They're kind of big and bulky, but they were really hip for a while.
Though, I don't know. Hip is not the word I would use, but we all wore them. So we're going to continue, and I apologize for Brian. I don't know what happened there with the technology, but we'll get back on track here. We got Sue's News in the next hour. Ilya Shapiro will be here from the Manhattan Institute, and Dave Murray's going to jump on and kind of give us another update on what's happening in California with the wildfires. Some good news. Some of the fires are a little bit more contained, but they still have more winds, and these high wind conditions are going to continue through next week. And it's just an utter disaster. So we'll continue to cover that. But I wanted to, one of the things I didn't get to this week was the changes at Facebook when it came to censorship and just some of their policies. This was Mark Zuckerberg a couple of days ago.
Hey, everyone. I want to talk about something important today because it's time to get back to our roots around free expression on Facebook and Instagram.
Go figure. I wonder why he's doing this. Can it be...
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something to do with Trump?
We're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms. More specifically, we're going to get rid of fact-checkers and replace them with community notes similar to X, starting in the U.S.
Finally did that, right? Because they were spiking a lot of content.
There's also a lot of legitimately bad stuff out there. Drugs, terrorism, child exploitation. These are things that we take very seriously, and I want to make sure that we handle responsibly. So we built a lot of complex systems to moderate content. But the problem with complex systems is they make mistakes. Even if they accidentally censor just 1% of posts, that's millions of people. And we've reached a point where it's just too many mistakes and too much censorship. The recent elections also feel like a cultural tipping point towards once again prioritizing speech.
You know, I'm going to rate that as true. And just to put all this in context, let me share something from a woman by the name of Margie Conklin, who wrote about this in the Free Press, because this is what happened several years ago that finally led Mark Zuckerberg to have an epiphany. I don't think it's that. I think it's Trump's election, right? To say what we're doing here is wrong. We have to change it. So Margie wrote, "When I first heard that Mark Zuckerberg was shutting down Facebook's fact-checking department, my first thought was too little, too late. That's because I've had my own experience with this team of fact checkers." She goes back to February of 2020. This was right before the pandemic was, you know, taking us all for 2 weeks to stop the, you know, spread, and then the whole world shut down, right? Back in February of 2020, when I was the Sunday editor of the New York Post, China expert Stephen Mosher pitched me a theory about how the coronavirus started. Back then, it was believed that it came from a wet market in Wuhan, but Stephen was unconvinced. He said it was much more likely that it had leaked from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which had been doing experiments with the coronavirus for years. Now, Margie points out this was before the lockdowns. This was before COVID had spread across America and killed millions of people. I mean, it was really, really active in Europe and Italy in particular, but it all happened very quickly here. We got to that first week of March. We were supposed to have NCAA tournament games here in St. Louis, and everything got canceled. We all know what happened at that point. But this was at a point where people were just starting to talk about the possibility of a global pandemic. So Margie says, "I was happy to publish Stephen's piece because I figured the world would want to hear an alternative idea at an important moment from a social scientist who had lived in China and written books about the country." So she says, "I was right about the story. In fact, now we know this. The lab leak theory is now seen as the most likely explanation for COVID's origins. But Margie says, I was wrong and naive to think that anyone in power would want to hear it. We published the piece," again, this was in the New York Post, "on February 22nd under the headline, 'Don't Buy China's Story. The coronavirus may have leaked from a lab.' It went viral immediately, its audience swelling for a few hours as readers liked and shared it over and over again." Now, she says, "I had a data tracker on my screen that showed the web traffic, and I could see the green line for my story surging up and up. And then, this is where it gets interesting, suddenly, for no reason, the green line dropped like a stone. No one was reading or sharing the piece. It was though it had never existed at all." So she says, "Seeing the story's traffic plunge, I was stunned. I thought, how does that even happen? How does a story that thousands of people are reading and sharing suddenly just disappear?" Later, she says, the New York Post digital editor gave me the answer. Facebook's fact-checking team had flagged the piece as, quote, "false information," unquote. "I was shocked," she says, "and embarrassed. Never in my life had a story I'd worked on been deemed, quote, false information." And she admits, for a moment, I second-guessed myself. I was worried that I had done something wrong or that I had caused reputational damage and possibly even financial damage to the post. If your outlook gets dinged three times by Facebook, the digital editor told me, they pretty much censor all your stories from the platform. No media outlet could afford that. In the meantime, she says, I kept seeing stories by legacy media outlets parroting the wet market theory, turning the idea of the lab leak into a conspiracy theory. The message was clear. The Post was irresponsible for even suggesting such hogwash. And Margie wrote, look, I felt ridiculous, or I feel ridiculous admitting it now. But even after more than 25 years as a journalist, even though I worked at a more irreverent newspaper, I strongly believed that our most prestigious outlets believed in seeking the truth. I trusted them, she says. Now I realize that they were pushing a singular narrative and squelching all other discussion. I was seeing big tech censorship of the American media in real time, and it chilled me to my bones, and it should have. And some of us had been chilled, and we were paying attention to this. And then guys like Mike Schellenberger and Matt Taibbi in particular, and I've described Matt Taibbi, he is a and had been a left-wing, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. He wrote for Rolling Stone for literally decades about climate nonsense, blah, 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 hating the Bush administration. He could not have been more on the fringe of the left. But then something amazing happened to Matt Taibbi and some other liberals out there. They got pretty pissed off that big tech was censoring content that was pretty valuable. And Margie says what even happened next was even more chilling, because then she finds out that the expert, the so-called expert who advised Facebook to censor the piece, had a major conflict of interest. This is where it gets even deeper. Professor Danielle E. Anderson had regularly worked with researchers at Wuhan, at the Institute of Virology, and even done her own experiments at the Institute. And she's the person who told Facebook's fact checkers that the lab had strict control and containment measures. Well, Margie wrote, yeah, of course she did. Facebook's fact checkers took her at her word. A, quote, expert had spoken. This is why I go on the mantra against experts, because the experts have been debunked quite a bit. Wuhan's lab was deemed secure, and the Post story was squashed in the interest of public safety. Mark Zuckerberg's team wasn't going to challenge the party line on the pandemic, especially after it was reported last year. Let's remember President Biden started pressuring Facebook to censor stories about COVID. Now, she says, thankfully, the Post won the battle to have Facebook's false information flag removed after a few months. But other outlets didn't seem to care. In the years that followed, I watched as the elite media happily continued to dismiss the Post as the purveyor of false information. The other stories that you're familiar with at this point, like Hunter Biden's laptop, Joe Biden's fitness to run the free world. There's a story that no one's really tackled yet.
Yep.
The biggest cover-up in maybe American political history. Let's just refer to it as that way. Outlets like Politico, The Washington Post, The New York Times sneered at the Post as far right, as a tabloid with a political axe to grind, trying to convince their readers that nothing that the paper reports is true. Well, now we know, you know, that Facebook finally, because of a lawsuit, and our state was important in jumping on that with Eric Schmidt and then Andrew Bailey, that the fact checks that they do are just opinion, you know. So Zuckerberg finally admits he's wrong, and he's getting rid of the fact checking department. Margie writes, it's not easy to deliver such a public mea culpa, but still I wonder how much it will help. Once you've shut down a toxic waste dump that's been poisoning a landfill for years, the ground is never the same. And that's what has happened to the American media with the help of big tech. I now wonder, and I think I'm answering my own question, would this have ever happened if Kamala Harris, in a horrifying way, would have won the White House? Probably not. Sue's News is coming up. Ilya Shapiro in the next hour as well. Dave Murray, the latest on the fires in our snowfall.
Get more at 971talk.com.